Welcome to the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle McEwen. You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. I'm joined tonight by Mark Roberts. You can find on Twitter at Mark F. Roberts. Daniel Green, who you can find on Twitter at Daniel. I always forget it. Help me out.
At Daniel A. Green 1. Green like the color, my friend.
And Tyler Watts.
I say that because a lot of people, you know, think green, they add the E, so it drives me nuts. So I got to say that.
Oh, so you're just saying no silent E at the end.
Correct. That is right.
Just straight up like the color. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tyler Watts. Tyler, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at Watsy4444, which is my last name with a Y and four fours.
That's so awesome. Thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Good to be here, man. Tyler, do you have a fascination with the number four? Why are there so many fours?
I don't know, because I tried 1-4 and someone stole that. So then I was just like, all right, 4, that'll be easy to remember.
All right. Is that Jeff Teague's number?
Sexy Jeff Teague.
So, Mark, we got an update on the rankings, right?
Yeah, we do. Brand new rankings. So if you go to the dailyfantasybasketballpodcast.com, you can see new head-to-head rankings. You can see new rotisserie rankings. And you can also see, by popular demand, real salary rankings. So if you play in a league that uses real salary net figures for all the players, it takes into account both their fantasy production and their NBA salary.
Who's the worst player to draft in a salary cap league this season?
I think that's a good question.
Let's just rub it in Harrison Barnes' face.
Do you have a guess?
Harrison Barnes. That's who I would say.
Maybe Tyler Johnson? Timothy Mozgov?
Chris Bosh.
Well, Bosh can't count. It's got to be someone.
You probably shouldn't draft Bosh, though, right? Because he's hardly going to play. We've got him projected for only 20 games.
You draft Bosh, you haven't been living on planet Earth for the last.
Middleton is pretty bad because
non-injury guys, though. You know? Who's just like not good at basketball?
Allen Crabbe.
Oh, you know what? Surprising. Allen Crabbe's a good basketball player, I think. I just don't think that. He doesn't get enough steals, you know? He doesn't get enough steals. He doesn't get enough rebounds. He doesn't do enough in addition to getting a couple of buckets and being okay efficiency-wise, you know?
Here are the bottom five injury edition. Harrison Barnes. Kyle, you got one. Chandler Parsons. DeMar DeRozan. Derrick Rose. Dwight Howard. Mike Conley.
You're saying like ratio wise, like money to so like their value.
Yeah. So for example, Mike Conley provides some value, right? Like he provides about $13 million of value in a fantasy league, so it's pretty good. But his salary is worth. He's making $27 million. He's the highest paid player in the league, and so he's just not worth.
Yeah. And he eats up your salary cap. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you can kind of look at it as he's a negative $14 million. So
I gotta say, like, is this like a big thing now with like playing fantasy with real salaries? Because like, I want in a league like this.
It's fun. We should start one. Yeah. We should get one going.
I want to get in a league like this. I've never played with a real salary league.
All right, we'll talk about this after the show, and we'll get one going for the podcast.
Yeah.
We'll get listeners to join it as well.
I've had more requests for real salary league rankings this year than any other year combined, and probably more requests for real salary rankings than anything else this year. So
I mean, it's a unique thing, so you know, it's like you can go find a lot of the other stuff other places if you want to, but salary cap stuff, that's hard to find.
I don't think there's real salary rankings as far as I know anywhere else on the internet. So
we've got them at BBM, but
do you? Okay,
so
just kidding. There's some on Basketball Monster, which you should definitely go check out.
Hey, thanks, Mark, for pimping that.
And especially you should check out all the articles that say Kyle McEwen.
Yeah, I actually just had a new article go up today. It's Overlooked Players. So essentially it's part one of Overlooked Players because I don't know when to shut up sometimes.
I started reading that at work and I scrolled through and I saw that you wrote like five paragraphs on Anthony Bennett. I was very impressed.
Hey, I hadn't written.
You had a lot of thoughts on Anthony Bennett.
I love him. There's something wrong with me, but look, you don't choose who you love, okay?
Yeah, man. And, I mean, I would say this, at least you preface it by saying, quote, I was reluctant to write about Bennett early this preseason because we hadn't heard much about this his work in camp.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. You were that was a complete lie. You were not reluctant to write about him.
I was, man. I wanted to write about Anthony Bennett in every single article I wrote this preseason. And I kept holding off on it because I just felt like, no, Kyle, you're being unreasonable. You looked at him through rose-colored glasses, you know, the same color as my crimson heart. So he's in a good situation. Cliff Notes version on Anthony Bennett, Atkinson, he's Atkinson's pet project. Atkinson saw him playing on the national team with Canada when Atkinson was coaching the Dominican national team. And he liked what he saw over there as somebody who can stretch the floor, also potentially protect the rim, or just be kind of a big body. He's only 6'9", but he's got a 7'1" wingspan. He's got the body and the athleticism to be a similar or a comparable player to someone like Draymond Green. So if you're matching up against Golden State, the best team in the league right now, and you're trying to find players to punch them in the mouth with, Anthony Bennett might be somebody you can develop into a guy who can kind of go toe-to-toe with Draymond Green, both athletically and also with his girth.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing when it comes to Anthony Bennett, though, is that he couldn't be on a better or worse team, however you want to look at it, in terms of Brooklyn. And, look at who's playing – who's, like, starting for Brooklyn? Is it Trevor Booker, a power forward? So, God forbid – I mean, if Bennett is ever going to do anything, I mean, this has got to be, the time. He couldn't ask for a better situation.
And he went to the free throw line 14 times one of Brooklyn's games this preseason already. Hit 12 of them. Like, he was – granted, he was going up against New York's backup big men, but he still did it. So there's something there. He was going aggressive to the rack.
I can't even imagine how excited you got about Anthony Bennett going to the free throw line. That must have been an exciting time for you.
It's my two biggest, coolest loves. Before the show started, before we started recording, I talked a lot about how I just love guys who go to the free throw line. Anyways.
And you have for years. So would you consider drafting him as a lottery ticket at the end of any sort of draft?
I've already drafted Anthony Bennett in a 30-team league.
Okay. So
with big rosters too. So, I mean,
16-team league, would you draft him with your last pick?
I doubt it. I'm not looking at Anthony Bennett as somebody who's a quote-unquote sleeper right now. He's like the Indian in the cupboard. There's going to have to be a magic key to unlock him. Turn him real. Somebody just spill water.
I was not prepared for an Indian in the cupboard.
I didn't know I had an Indian either. All right, we've talked enough about Anthony Bennett for crying out loud. Let's get into the things that we actually planned on talking about.
I wonder if we'll ever mention him again on the podcast this year.
I need to have a correction. In the last podcast we did about a week ago, I said that Dean Vasich had provided the Yahoo
that we were looking at,
and it was actually from Sam Macy. So Macetastic on Twitter, I'm an idiot. I don't even know how the hell I got that confused, but it happened. So Sam Macy, you're awesome. Thank you for helping us kind of provide the outline to the content we provided in the last podcast.
Dean's not as awesome as we described.
Dean's still cool, okay? Dean's a great guy.
He's cool, but he's not as cool now. As if he would have put him together.
Cool, all right? Hey, okay. We don't need to say one guy. We don't need to do that, all right? Everybody's cool. We need to appreciate each other for the things that are good in us or whatever. D'Angelo Russell, let's talk about somebody fun. This cat's going out and doing some amazing things this preseason. We knew he was going to have a bigger role with Kobe Bryant being out of town, with Byron Scott no longer being the coach. But he's scoring almost a point per minute right now. He's shooting over 50% from the field. He's hitting tons of three-pointers. He's getting steals. Where in the heck do you take D'Angelo Russell now in drafts? Because I don't think he's going later than the fifth round.
Yeah, that's a great question. So you know how I feel about preseason, which is I don't put any stock in preseason. Not because I don't think there's anything to be learned, but I'm not smart enough to tease out like what's important, what's not important. Mm-hmm. All that being said, if you look at our head-to-head rankings, D'Angelo Russell is 36th right now, which means I think he's a – it means he's a third-round pick, basically, end of the third round. And that's strictly based on his performance last year and then given a trending forward based on how other similar players did in their second season. So if you're telling me that his production in the preseason has been good and is a sign that he's going to do better in the regular season, I think that only adds to the you know, support the argument that he should be drafted maybe in the third round.
You're definitely – I think the only thing you're really concerned about with D'Angelo Russell is are his percentages going to get better and stay better this season? Because he only shot 41% from the field last year, 35% from the three-point line, and 74% from the free throw line. And when you talk about rotisserie leagues, we often discuss the fact that you need team percentages somewhere around 48% for your field goal percentage is what you want to aim for. That's usually what the top team in the league will get about. And then for your free throw percentage, it's somewhere between 80 and 82% usually is what I see. In my rotisserie leagues, that's what the top team finishes at. So when you talk about D'Angelo Russell, a player who's expected to take a lot of shots this season, most likely be the number one option on this Lakers team, if he shoots a low percentage, you're going to have that Paul George effect, that Damian Lillard effect, where you're trying to dig out of a hole for field goal percentage. So we've seen some encouraging improvements with his shot as far as it being more efficient here in the preseason. And there's also is reason to be encouraged that D'Angelo Russell would get more open shots this year because he's playing in a more modern offense. And he's also going to have the ball in his hands all the time. So he gets to pick and choose his shots instead of maybe being forced into taking certain shots off the ball away from Jordan Clarkson, away from Kobe Bryant last year. They've actually got Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench this preseason, serving in kind of the backup point guard role and six-man role right now. And Lou Williams is starting at shooting guard. So D'Angelo Russell's the orchestrator of the Lakers offense. There's just a lot of potential up there with him right now.
Yeah, I mean,
I felt like a shot at Byron Scott's offense.
What
you said, it's more modern this year.
Well, it's got to be, right. You go back and you watch that any of the tape from last year's Lakers games. It was pretty much a college offense. They would just kind of pass the ball out around the perimeter,
and they were hamstrung just because he had to just placate Kobe. So it was basically just pass Kobe the ball. Everyone just stand there and do nothing.
Right. Yeah. It was just disgusting the whole thing. The Kobe farewell tour.
Yeah, the thing I'll say about Russell, I mean, I'm with you. I'm with both of you guys. I mean, I'm a big fan of him. I think he's by far going to be the Lakers. I guess not by far, but he's going to be their best player this year. Probably take the most shots. But I think the defenses are going to start gearing their defenses towards him, especially toward the middle of the season, later in the season. So I can't envision him shooting a solid field goal percentage. I just can't see it happening. So. I'm really high on him in head-to-head, but like you said, in rotisserie leagues, I think he's going to kill your field goal percentage.
I think that's an interesting point, the fact that once he truly does become the lead guard, the main man, the number one option, teams are going to start to try to disrupt him to make him force things. And you're right, there's going to be road bumps in his development this season.
Yep, he's going to see a lot of the opposing teams, that a lot of their best perimeter defenders are going to be guarding him, and he's going to struggle, I think, as the season progresses. In terms of field goal percentage, I think he's still going to have solid numbers, but that field goal percentage, it's tough to envision him shooting in the mid-40s even, I think.
I'll say I have high expectations, or rather I'm very open to the idea that the fact that D'Angelo Russell is going to have the ball in his hands all the time and picking all of his own shots, it's such a big difference from last season where he was playing off the ball so much. I mean, he averaged only 3.3 assists per game playing 28 minutes, and we know he's an above-average passer. I would be surprised if he doesn't get about 6 assists this season, especially if he's getting 33, 34 more minutes a game.
I think he might be a second round pick.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. If you look at our projections, like the numbers that we project him to, and where he comes out at number 36 aren't even that high. I mean, it's like 4 assists, 16 points, 4 rebounds. I think he can definitely hit those. So in a head to head league, I agree with Kyle. I think he can probably approach 6 assists.
I think he's shown in preseason a little bit from what little I've watched, an ability to move around the floor to get to where he wants to off the dribble, and also to score in just in a variety of ways. When he's out there on the court, he'll dribble across the middle and kind of throw up a floater. You know, he's not just chucking shots from three. He's able to score by going to the rack and making a play at the hoop too with a crafty layup, similar to, you know, Steph Curry.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, one of the most important things is, you know, this is like a direct quote, I think, from one of the LA beat writers. I mean, you know, Luke Walton's ready to turn him loose. So, I mean, basically, if Luke Walton's already, you know, trusting him, I don't know why I keep calling him Luke, like Luke Olsen from the Arizona head coach. But if Luke Walton's already going to, you know, trust him that much, I mean, that's a great sign for D'Angelo Russell.
So let's talk about his counterpart there, though, Jordan Clarkson. He is coming off the bench right now. It appears that I think Luke Walton, from everything I've read, he said these preseason lineups aren't definitive. So don't read into it too much, but it feels like they're strongly considering bringing Jordan Clarkson off the bench. Does this increase his value or decrease his value? Because there's an argument that coming off the bench and not playing hand in hand with D'Angelo Russell could open up more assists for Jordan Clarkson, which could give him better overall value. Plus just having the ball in his hands, that's how Jordan Clarkson is at his best, is being able to attack the rack and just attack off the dribble in general. Sorry, I should have kicked it to somebody. Tyler, you want to jump in?
Is Tyler alive? Tyler, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I actually think that they're going to spread the minutes between the two as much as possible, because like you said, I think Clarkson does do better with the ball in his hands. And so I still think Clarkson's going to get like 30 minutes a night. It's just going to be, they're going to try to spread those two out as much as possible. And I actually think it's better for his value in some ways, because he's going to get more assists. He's going to get more chances with the ball in his hands to create his own shot. And he's freaky athletic.
Yeah. I wish that I think part of having Lou Williams in the starting lineup is you have another veteran guy there. So it's less mistakes to pair with Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell. So that's probably where it helps a little bit.
Yeah. And I definitely think that, Luke Walton wants to spread the defense as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you could get a better shooter out there.
All right. Yusuf Nurkic has been straight up balling for the Denver Nuggets so far this preseason. I think we're all pretty settled. Everything that I've seen says Nurkic, Jokic, they're starting in the front court together. Some people have been worried though that the explosion of Yusuf Nurkic putting up great stats, they want to know, is this now going to hurt Nikola Jokic's value? Because Jokic is O-ranked 25 on Yahoo. You have to draft him early if you want him. And there is some risk with Jokic just from the fact that, we haven't seen him actually play the big minutes that we're now expecting him to.
I don't know, for me, you know, in this day and age, it's hard to envision how a Jokic-Nurkic kind of, you know, two monsters, twin towers, I guess, going back to like the David Robinson, Tim Duncan, how that's going to play in today's modern NBA. So I don't know. I need to kind of see this. I know that they've looked good together in the preseason, but it's just, I mean, aren't they going to just get beat up and down the court? I mean, it's tough to say how much it's going to hurt, you know, Jokic's value. I'm not too concerned with that. I just think eventually Fareed's going to get more minutes. I think that's how it's going to play out.
I think part of the reason why, look, Jokic is great, Nurkic is great, that's the biggest reason why they're going to play these two guys together so many minutes.
I agree with that. But I mean, can you envision both of them on the court and it actually being successful in terms of helping them win games?
I think they're both above average passers, and Jokic is like an elite passer. So that's going to help them. Jokic being able to stretch the floor, that's good. Your biggest issue or your concern, I'm sure this is what you're like alluding to, Daniel, is just defensively. Can right. Jokic stay up with a Paul Millsap type
Correct.
Four? And I don't know, but is he good enough on offense to navigate that? Because Nurkic deserves to be on the floor because he's the team's best shot blocker and best rim protector. Jokic, you're right. There's some concern there. Maybe they have to stagger the minutes a little bit to make it work, to make sure that both of them are playing a lot. But when you consider the other options, watching Kenneth Fareed right now, that guy doesn't even box out on every single shot. He just looks atrocious out there it's not even that he looks atrocious. Look, he just looks like the same guy he looked like 4 years ago. There has been zero developmental growth with Kenneth Reed over the last 4 years.
He's been one of the most frustrating players to own the last 4 years too. I mean, it's just been painful because you keep waiting for him to break out and it just does not happen.
It's never going to.
Other thing, Kyle, what do you think about this though? I mean, I could see Gallo playing whenever Gallo gets back, I could see him playing the four, a lot of stretch four this year as well.
Totally. You got Danilo Gallinari, you got Wilson Chandler, both guys who could play small ball fours there for them. Darrell Arthur is a confident, good player when he's healthy, but he'll only be healthy some of the time. Juancho Hernan Gomez has shown some interesting flashes there. There's tons of stuff that these guys could do as far as running out smaller lineups, because you also look at their backcourt and they have interesting players there that they're going to want to get minutes. We've seen Jamal Murray playing well in the preseason, and to the degree that you almost start to think, man, is Jamal Murray going to eat into Emmanuel Mudiay's minutes too much? Or is he going to eat into Gary Harris's minutes too much? And then where does that all leave Will Barton in the whole grand scheme of things? Is he going to be completely out the rotation when everybody's healthy? Because like we talked about, you've got Wilson Chandler coming off the bench too this season, most likely.
I mean, Denver's going to be one of these teams. I have a feeling all year long we're going to be talking about them, because there's a lot of nice pieces here, and it's just going to be in flux, I think, all year long.
I hope that Coach Michael Malone decides to lock in on certain players and just give them big minutes, kind of the way that he did with Gary Harris last year, where right. He just said, you know what, this dude's getting 34 minutes a night. He just has to because of his defense and his solid play. Did Mark, are you still there? Mark just dipped out, didn't he?
I think he did.
Diabolical. Well, that was nice. We were planning on that. I don't know where to go now. I'm a little bit shocked. I kind of wanted to. I was trying to get in the Nurkic stuff because I wanted to hear about what he was thinking there. What do you guys think about that whole backcourt issue, though? Because, yes, Gary Harris is going to be out for the first several weeks of the regular season. But when he comes back, and he's probably going to take over that starting job again from Will Barton, who's got it right now. Do you see Will Barton still being in the rotation, or is there really a risk of him falling completely out of it?
Tyler, do you want to jump in?
I think Will Barton could actually fall out of it, just because I think they're going to be committed to playing Murray. And I mean, obviously they have Harris and they have Mudiay. I would be interested to see if they try to trade him. I mean, there's lots of teams looking to give up big men, and teams are looking for guards. So I think maybe they may try to deal them to someone.
No, it'll be interesting just to see exactly what happens with Denver as far as who they trade, who they keep, if they make any moves, because they have so many. They have a lot of deep, high potential players, or they have a deep roster full of high potential players, and it'll be interesting to see who they want to stick with. But I didn't get it across earlier, but Nurkic, how well he's playing right now. His last game, he played 31 minutes. He put up 21 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 9 of 12 from the free throw line. He's shooting wonderfully from the free throw line, which is something that was a concern with him in the past, or in his rookie season. He shot just 62% from the free throw line. If Nurkic is going to get up his field goal percentage, his free throw percentage, and become more efficient, that makes him a lot more intriguing in rotisserie leagues. So I would consider targeting Nurkic in rotisserie leagues now too, because it looks like he's not going to be as big of a detriment as he once was. That's probably enough on Denver. Let's go talk about Jordan McRae from Cleveland Cavaliers. Jordan McRae has been getting some big minutes this preseason. Granted, in the Cavaliers' last preseason game, they didn't play any of their key players. They had, I believe, Corey Jefferson starting at power forward. So who is Corey Jefferson? It doesn't matter. But Jordan McRae has been putting up some good production. He put up 20 points in each of his two first preseason games, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 assists in the next game, and then 3 rebounds and 5 assists in his last game. He's getting some good production, but is this just one of those preseason fairy tales where Jordan McRae is showing out, or is this going to lead to actual value this season? Because right now, there is some minutes available, especially if they don't end up re-signing J.R. Smith, which that whole situation is still in flux.
Yeah, to me, the whole thing is you kind of nailed it with that last line. I think if they re-sign J.R. Smith, Jordan McRae, unfortunately, he's just not going to amount to much this year. Cleveland's still, one of the top teams in the NBA. I don't know how many shots are going to be there. You're talking, Kyrie, LeBron, Kevin Love. With those three, there's just not much left over. So if J.R. Smith comes back, I just can't see him having much of a role, in real life or in fantasy for that matter. If J.R., they don't sign him, then I guess he could have a role, but I'm not sure. Again, how many shots do we really and how many minutes do we expect him to get? I mean, they still have Shumpert,
I think Jordan McRae, like what we're seeing right here, this just informs you to say, all right, he's going to be on the roster. They're potentially going to give him minutes at shooting guard, small forward, backing up both those positions. They were giving him some looks at point guard early this preseason, but they went away from that. Essentially, those nights where the Cavs decide to rest LeBron and potentially Kyrie on the same night, maybe then Jordan McRae gets a ton of minutes off the bench.
Yeah, I think on nights like that, he'd be a nice DFS, a sneaky play on DFS.
Exactly. That's where you're going to have the most value with Jordan McRae. He's a DFS player on a given night when the Cavs are resting a bunch of players. Let's move on and talk about somebody from the Chicago Bulls, Nikola Mirotic. First couple preseason games, he was atrocious, couldn't find his shot. He didn't start the first game, then he started the second game, then he came off the bench again in the third game, and he went off in the third game. He was hitting all of his shots, looking good. What exactly do we do with Nikola Mirotic? He's still going in the middle to late rounds of drafts right now. Is he going to actually carve out a consistent role at some time? Is he going to stake a claim to that starting power forward position, Tyler? Or are we going to see Mirotic kind of in limbo all season again, just like he was last year under Fred Hoiberg?
I think they're going to need his floor spacing and three-point shooting. So, I think he's going to get minutes. And, per minute, he is a good producer of everything. You look at Mark's 8 category rankings. In 28 minutes, he comes out ranked 62nd, and that's shooting 40% from the field. So that's obviously going to drop that down in 8 category rankings. So, I think he's going to produce, even in limited minutes, worthy of being picked in pretty much any draft.
Yeah, and he still has the most upside out of, Taj Gibson and Bobby Portis and Mirotic. Mirotic still has the most upside out of those three. It's been very frustrating to watch him play, especially those first two preseason games. And Taj Gibson has been balling out of his mind. So that's a little concerning. But, they, like Tyler said, they need that floor spacing desperately when you got Rondo, Wade, and Jimmy Butler out there.
Dwayne Wade's been nailing the three-pointers.
I know. It's been crazy. Yep. It's been crazy. And he did in the playoffs last year too. So, I didn't understand why, the last few years he hasn't been shooting more threes. You knew Wade's game was going to age. He wasn't going to be able to attack like that, for his whole career. So I don't know why the last couple of years he just wasn't shooting many threes. It was really bizarre to see.
He's essentially been saying that I was younger. I could get to the rack. Why would I shoot a three if I can go get to the rack? So now he's coming out in the preseason right now, and he had 3 of 4 last game, 0 of 1 the game before, and then 2 of 2 in the first preseason game. Wade also had 8 assists in the last Chicago Bulls game.
The thing with that is Rondo was out that game.
Right. Yeah. That's
the biggest problem I see watching all, and I've watched all the, since Wade's my favorite player, I've watched every single stupid Bulls preseason game. The biggest problem that I think they're going to have this year is Rondo and Wade. Wade needs the ball in his hands. Jimmy Butler does too, but Rondo dominates that ball so dang much, and Wade likes the ball too. So I don't know. I see a major issue going on with those two in the backcourt.
Yeah, no, for the most part, I don't want any stock in pretty much anybody on Chicago this year because I don't trust Hoiberg. I feel like drafting Nikola Mirotic, and if you expect him to play 26 minutes a night and that's what your expectation is, okay, cool. Then draft him and he'll have his up and down nights, but overall he'll put up good production per minute, like Tyler said. But I don't want to be on that roller coaster from night to night wondering if Mirotic is going to start, if he's going to come off the bench, if I don't care how good Taj Gibson has been in the preseason. We know who Taj Gibson is. And what has he really been What? Oh, he was 9 of 9 from field goals, from the field in a preseason game. Like, it's Taj Gibson, man. He can hit a baseline jumper. He can stretch out the floor a little bit.
And he plays solid defense.
Yeah, and he plays hard. But he doesn't stretch the floor. He's not even trying to hit three-pointers right now. He took 1 3-point shot in the first 3 preseason games. You cannot have Robin Lopez starting and Taj Gibson next to those 3 other guys. You can't do it. You're not going to win. You're not going to be a good team.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised. Well, one thing that emboldened me a little bit is I thought that the Bulls looked good when they would had Mirotić and Taj Gibson out there together, and they were just saying, like, all right, Taj Gibson's the center. He's just playing an undersized center. I thought they looked best when they were doing that. And maybe there's a possibility that Robin Lopez ends up getting boned and sent to the bench because they just decide that, you know what, with these 3 non-3-point shooters in the backcourt we got, with Butler, Gibson, or Butler, Wade, and Rondo, we've gotta get Mirotić in here. So let's just throw Gibson at center and kind of go with the small ball thing. But that won't happen either because Hoiberg's gonna do traditional stupid stuff most likely. It seems like.
Yeah,
which
I mean,
means Robin Lopez at center.
I think Mirotić, though, he's going to be another one of those guys he's going to be a sneaky play in DFS most nights as long as his price stays relatively low. Because he's going to get open shots, and if he can knock them down, he could have big games. So, you know,
he's a this. You know what pisses me off the most about Mirotić? He's a guy who you can almost see him get uncomfortable on the court when he's not hitting his shots, and yeah, you just see all the confidence drip out of him. And I hope, well, it doesn't seem like it, but Hoiberg should be out in the media being like, this guy. You know, he should be building up his confidence.
I have not seen that either.
They should be looking at him as their starting power forward, knowing that they need their success pretty much rides on how good Nikola Mirotić develops into as a player right now.
Yep.
And as long as they're going to go out there with this current lineup, I mean, Rondo should be waived and they should be playing Denzel Valentine at point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie. They should see what they can get out of him too.
I'm so down with that. Like I pray that for like something to go wrong early in the season, then they could somehow trade Rondo and get him out of there. And I think the Bulls would be a lot better.
It's the thing is the front office is so bad right now. They're antiquated.
Well, and if you read, you listen to the beat writers, you read all the articles coming out of Chicago, and you see what the coach Hoiberg says. They love Rondo. It pains me every freaking time I hear it. Like they're so enamored with him right now regarding his leadership and how he's looked on the court. It's just so annoying greed because it's just not a good. You know, as we've already discussed, it's just not a good fit.
And it feels like they're placating him. It's like they're massaging his.
Yeah. Yep, you're absolutely right.
All right, let's move on and talk about Gordon Hayward. He broke his left finger. He's going to miss about a month probably here at the start of the regular season. If Gordon Hayward drops to me now at a certain spot, I'm going to be so happy to get him. He's at a point in his career where Quinn Snyder said that he was playing like an elite player now. Like he was going out there and not necessarily forcing things, but just being like, all right, I'm better than this. I can be, this is going to sound stupid. I can be LeBron-esque in my role. I can do more. I can be more for my team. I can be a superstar potentially.
To me, he was one of the more frustrating players to own last year. Like I kept waiting for more. Like especially because they had no point guard at all last year. So I kept wanting him to take on more of a playmaking role, and he just didn't do it last year. And me and Mark would talk about this, and Tyler too, on the podcast, and we just couldn't figure out like why. I mean, and he still had a pretty solid year.
But he's probably just too nice of a guy, and he didn't demand it. You know, he should. If you're making a great point. If Howell Neto's out there, if Shelvin Mack, regardless, Shelvin Mack's been good since he's been on the Utah Jazz, but if you're playing with those guys, just go take the ball from them.
I know, right? It made no sense. Like, I'd watch the games. I'd be banging my head. I'm like, go get the ball, Gordon. Like, Mac is not a point guard. But, you know, I mean, the thing with this roster right now, I'm a big fan of Rodney Hood, and I really like Derek Favors to start the season with, you know, as until Gordon Hayward gets back. I think those two get off to a really good start.
I'm afraid of Derek Favors. I don't see the same ceiling that everybody else sees with Derek Favors. He's not as athletic as a power forward as like a Paul Millsap, yet he still can do a little bit of putting the ball on the floor. He can stretch the floor with his shot out to the free throw line or a little bit beyond, but he's not hitting three pointers. He protects the rim well. Look, I like Derek Favors, but like, I don't see superstar. I see really, really good role player. Not role play, but like just below all star. That's what I see Derek Favors as. Am I off on that?
No, I mean, I tend to agree with that. I just think, you know, since Gordon's going to be out for a little bit.
So you're saying who's going to pick up the slack?
Yeah, someone's got to score. And I think, you know, he's by far their best option. So I expect his numbers, you know, to go up to start the season, especially when it comes to scoring.
In general, I'm sitting here and I'm saying, well, maybe Dante Exum actually does a little bit. Or maybe Rodney Hood picks up the slack, because I think Exum's going to play more minutes. I think Hood's going to have more possessions. Joe Johnson's going to get to play more. Trey Lyles will get a little bit more. Definitely Derek Favors. You know, there's so many options. Even George Hill. How much of a role can George Hill have on this team? Because he's so much better than the point guards that they've had in the past. That's why Gordon Hayward being out, I'm not looking at any one player and saying I'm going to kind of bump them up the rankings a large amount. And then it's also the fact that Hayward broke his finger on his non-shooting hand. So he still can probably do a lot of work while he's waiting to come back once everything gets settled and whatnot. So I'm not, you know, it would probably be a lot worse if Hayward was standing on the sideline, not being able to shoot, and not, then he comes back and he'd probably struggle and be a little bit rusty. But if he falls, I'm gonna be kind of bullish on him. I think
the one thing I want to say about it is in Mark's A category rankings, he still ranks 54th, even if you bump him down to 64 games. So I mean, like that's kind of the where I see it is. Like, I think it's gonna be a buying opportunity that people in your league are gonna like just let this guy go, and then you can probably get him in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th round.
Yeah, we're talking about Gordon Hayward still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
It's more or less only if he falls to a value at you at a price, because I do have the same concerns that Daniel voiced earlier about the fact that you expected so much more from Gordon Hayward last season. I don't want to fall into that same trap this year, drafting him, expecting him to be a possibly over 20-point scorer, although he did get 19.7 points per game last year. I'm with you. I just, you know, I wanted that superstar Gordon Hayward, because I feel like he might be able to do that if he kind of just starts taking the ball from lesser players and saying, hey, look, I'm LeBron. Get out of my way.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it's tough for me this year to be so gung-ho on him, because they do have better point guards this year. So, you know, I guess you could make a case either way, maybe having more of a playmaker, you know, maybe he could score more points. But his playmaking is kind of plateaued. I don't see him, you know, getting over, you know, the 4.5 assists a game anymore. You know, I used to dream of that. I can't see my dream becoming a reality.
It might just be a usage thing though, too, because of the fact that like wanting Gordon Hayward to be that more demonstrative player on offense, might not be this Utah Jazz team just might be the 2004 Pistons or, you know, Spurs essentially, where everything gets spread out. And all we care about is winning, and it doesn't really matter who gets what stats-wise.
And the other thing that worries me about Utah, and I'm anxious to see what they do, is just in terms of pace. Are they going to play super slow? You know, what are they going to do? I mean, you know, because they got Gobert and Derek Favors, you know, but I mean, I'm not sure, you know, in terms of style of play, you know, what it's going to look like. Obviously, the slower they play, you know, that, you know, the lower everyone's numbers are going to be. So I don't think that they're going to have as many possessions as a lot of the other teams out there.
Yeah, that's a good point too. All right, Reggie Jackson. He underwent that PRP, plasma treatment on his knee to relieve tendonitis that had been bothering him.
Is that legal in the U.S. now? It is, right? Or no? Is it still not legal?
Pretty sure he went to New York to do it. So okay. Maybe there's like a New York loophole though. So Not really sure.
That was the surge. That was the thing that everyone went to Germany for back in the day, right?
Yeah, that Kobe went over to Germany. Yeah. Again. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but seems it's domesticated. But Reggie's going to be out for about 6 to 8 weeks. Means he's going to miss first month the regular season. Ish Smith is filling in at point guard. Really, Ish is a head-to-head league guy who you get four assists, and that's about it. He's not going to get you steals. He might hit you a three-pointer every once in a while. His percentages are probably going to suck. So it's really just assist. And I don't think I'd be adding Smith or looking at him really much in rotisserie leagues. You can consider him as a flyer at the end of your draft if you are desperate for assists. But 10, 12 team leagues, I'm probably going to find somebody else I like a lot more to take a flyer on at the end of my draft.
Since this is your squad, in terms of, since Reggie's going to be out, I mean, who do you see this benefiting the most? I mean, a KCP, you know, more shots for, you know, Tobias Harris. I mean, like, do you see anyone benefiting?
I don't know if we know yet. Because I don't see Ish Smith being the best thing for this team right now.
The problem that I see is Ish is not a scorer, right? And Reggie is a scorer. I mean, Reggie's usage rate was ridiculously high last year, so a lot of shots are going to open up here. And I'm not sure who's going to get the shots. I mean, I could see it going a lot of different ways.
I mean, the fan in me wants them to start freaking Stanley Johnson at point guard. They've had him try to play backup point guard in the past. But just, you got KCP can do a little bit with the ball. He's not going to do a lot. He can do a little bit. He can move with the ball. He can distribute a little bit, not a lot. I'm not trying to overstate that. But Marcus Morris can do a little bit. He can score one-on-one. Tobias Harris can score one-on-one. You should be able to use all between those four guys, you should be able to get enough ball handling and just moving the ball through passing and penetrating that. I don't know if you need a traditional point guard on this team.
So didn't the beat writer guy say that they're thinking about trying to run the offense more through Harris and Morris and like not kind of get the ball away from a traditional point guard? I thought I read that yesterday.
They should be doing that.
And I thought that would be really interesting for both their values, obviously. I mean, getting just the ball in your hands a little bit more usually creates a lot more fantasy goodness.
The most frustrating thing for me watching the first Pistons preseason game was the fact that, and I might have shared this last week, but they didn't play that time. But anyways, it was the fact that with the second unit, they don't ever give the ball to Stanley Johnson and let him attack. Like he gets up the court quicker than anybody. If they just gave him the ball, he could run up the court, try to attack, see if he can get to the rack, get an easy bucket before the defense gets set, potentially draw a foul. And then if it doesn't work out, if the defense gets back and gets set, he can just kick it out to Ish Smith or Reggie or whoever. But I really just wish that they would just give him the ball so he can get out on the fast break a little bit or just push the pace and help the team kind of get out. Because Andre Drummond's a guy who can get out and run with you. And if you've got Stanley attacking and then Drummond's just a little bit behind and the defenders collapse, like, okay, you dig what I'm saying? Like, whatever, man. I watch you guys probably don't watch nearly as much Pistons as I do.
Is Stanley Johnson a guy that you would consider drafting at the end of a draft?
Not right now because they're not leaning on him.
Yeah,
he's in the same exact role as he was last season, which is a defense first. He comes in off the bench, and they put him on the whoever like the team's ball handler, the other team's best ball handler.
Yep.
And they try to get him to cause problems there defensively mostly, and then on offense, he often gets used as a release valve at the end of the possession, which is a difficult shot rushed because he's either covered or the shot clock is winding down. So I don't know that there's a lot of value to be taken away. John Luehr had an interesting game the last game. I think he had like four assists. So maybe they're trying to look at John Luehr as kind of a backup playmaker for them. You know, and Luehr plays Tobias Harris' position. So Tyler, you sit here and you say that about Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris makes you think, okay, well, same guy, same, you know, another guy, same role, John Luehr, maybe he gets a little bit more run or a couple more usages, a little bit more usage per possessions because they're even going to look at John Lure as a potential small ball center too. So maybe he gets some extra minutes there off the bench too. Anyways, a lot of this is just deep league crap that nobody probably cares about. Jeremy Lin, what do we want to talk about in regard to him? He's been having a pretty good preseason right now.
I mean, I've been watching a ton of Brooklyn games, and a lot of this is just, I mean, a lot of what I do in the preseason is just in terms of DFS. I try to, you know, figure out, you know, especially the crappy teams who I can play, who can be sneaky plays early in the year that I can make some money off of. So I'm trying to get a feel for who Brooklyn's going to play. And first of all, Brooklyn is just horrendous. I mean, I can't, like, in terms of just talent, they have no talent. I mean, it's embarrassing.
But their starting lineup right now is like Jeremy Lin, yeah. Randy Foy,
yep.
Ronnie Hollis Jefferson, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Trevor Booker, which is not awesome.
Trevor Booker.
And Brook Lopez.
Yeah.
I like Lin. I like Rondé. I like Brook Lopez. They've been bringing Bojan Bogdanovic along slowly because he played with his national team this summer.
He's a disaster, though. He's a disaster.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yes. I don't know how many times I can say yes. I mean, dear God, I've given this guy so much, like so many chances. He started a good amount last year too. I mean, he's a streaky shooter. So if he's making a shot, he can have some good games. But in terms of like an overall player, I just do not think he's a very good NBA player. Defensively, you know, in particular, but offensively, he's just way too streaky.
Well, I think those minutes between Randy Foy and Bojan Bogdanovic, I think, like the shooting guard and small forward minutes are going to be kind of shared between Rondé, Randy Foy, and Bojan Bogdanovic. Those are going to be the three main kind of shooting guard / small forward guys. So
yeah.
Whether or not that's fun or good, that's kind of – it's crappy. It's going to be the way it is probably.
Oh yeah. No, the thing that – I mean, even though he sucks, he's going to put up decent numbers because again, they have no one else to play. Like, that's just how bad their roster is right now.
Well, I mean, Voyan's been – he doesn't really do anything defensively. He doesn't get you defensive stats. He's pretty much just points and three-pointers. So the one thing that made me say, all right, give him another chance is there's a new coach in town, Kenny Atkinson, and Atkinson talked about using Bojan Bogdanovic a little bit different this season as far as letting him post up against smaller players because he does have good size and just utilizing – more of his game instead of only asking him to shoot from the 3-point line. So maybe we'll see him do a little bit more, maybe expand his game, potentially put the ball on the floor a little bit. I think overall Bojan Bogdanovic is potential is higher than Randy Foy, maybe just because we've seen such a long kind of track record with Randy Foy and with Bogdanovic, there's still kind of hope that there might be something else hidden there.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I think Bogdanovic, as sad as it sounds, I mean, if you want to draft him late in the draft, I mean, he's actually worth a look. And if you need threes, but just going back to Jeremy Lin, he's a guy that now, like, I think he was starting out ranked in like my 70s. Like, I bumped him up in, like, the mid-50s in terms of my own rankings and where I'm looking to draft him in my own drafts. Like, he's going to have the ball in his hands and be able to do whatever the heck he wants. So, like I'm all aboard Jeremy Lin right now. Like, I think
he reworked his jump shot this offseason. And apparently he uses a lot less energy now to get it off, so there's going to be a lot more consistency with it, which potentially will lead to a better shooting percentage from the field and more three-pointers.
Yeah.
He was also working – he got – what did he hit? 4 or 5 three-pointers in their first preseason game?
And yeah, something like that.
And he was working off the ball a lot. It just worked out that way. That they got done with the game, and everybody was like, yeah, what was going on? You weren't, like, being the point guard. You were working off the ball so much. And he was like, that's the way the game went. And Kenny Atkinson even said, yeah, no, that's not generally how we're going to play. It's going to be more, you know, Lin's going to have the ball in his hands. They're going to take advantage of his playmaking ability. So yeah, you're right, man. I've drafted Lin pretty much. I'm targeting him in every single draft.
Yeah,
I like him.
I like
his potential to get a better field goal percentage enough that I'm not scared off him in rotisserie leagues.
Yeah. And everyone's sleeping on him. I think he's going, I've seen him go like in the 80s, 90s, 100s in certain leagues. And I'm like, dear God, like, maybe people just are just don't want to even think about Brooklyn. So, but
that was definitely that was definitely true a little bit earlier in the preseason, and I'm sure there's some leagues where he'll continue to get slept on because people just don't realize like the opportunity that is there for him.
Right.
But yeah, for the most part, I mean, I think in my most recent draft, Lynn went like in the seventh round. So he is getting up there now. You're going to have to probably make an investment by the seventh round to get him. At least that's the last couple of drafts that I've noticed. All right, final guy we're going to talk about tonight, Hassan Whiteside. In three preseason games, he's averaging just 24 minutes per game while putting up 19.3 points, 13 rebounds, and 3.3 blocks. He hasn't shot the ball from the free throw line as well in the preseason, but I think it's just 5 of 10 so far. That's the only real concern with Whiteside, right? Is whether or not he's going to be the old Whiteside free throw shooter or the guy who shot 75% from the field in the second half last season after he changed his free throw shot.
Another interesting thing is like if you look at our website and our rankings, so we have him in like head to heads, we have him 21st. But we have him only averaging 14.3 points. And the reason why I wanted to bring Whiteside up again, I just think he's going to outscore a hell of a lot more than 14.3 points.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, he's like a 20-point scorer this year.
Yeah, that's kind of the main thing I want to get at. I mean, and if he's going to be scoring 20 points a game, which me and you both think he is, I think we have him ranked a little bit too low.
Oh, totally.
And I think, you know, again, you're talking about, remember, no Wade, no Bosch, no Luol Deng, no Joe Johnson. I mean, they have Dragic, and like, that's about it in terms of scoring. So Winslow can't score, no offensive game. So, I mean, Whiteside, he's going to get, I think, 20 points. He's going to get as many opportunities as he can. So, you know, I mean, I'm with you. The free throw percentage is a concern. But, you know, I guess depending on the format, I mean, I still think, you know, he's a monster upside guy.
Yeah, and actually he's now oh, Sugar Plum, I can't do math. He's now 8 of 14 in the preseason. So I think there's a good possibility that he's going to still be the same free throw guy that he was in the second half last season. He changed his approach at it. And if he's hitting 75% from the line, he's great for rotisserie, not just the head-to-head punt strategies that you would prefer to have had him in the past. So, super dope. I love getting Hassan Whiteside. I'm willing to take him at the end of the first. I love getting him at the turn at the beginning of the second if you've got him there. Anytime in the second, if you get Hassan Whiteside, I feel like you're getting tremendous value right now.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, you draft Whiteside, and you basically have blocks almost locked up in a way.
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, an Andre Drummond-esque rebounder as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Somebody who has a even more – impressive offensive post game, and Hassan Whiteside can actually step out and hit like an 18 footer.
Yep, he can.
He's got a smooth stroke. I don't think we're gonna see him do anything crazy like step out and hit three pointers this season. But he's definitely somebody who can stretch the floor with his offense, which gives him another reason to keep him out there on the floor. Those are all the guys that I really wanted to talk about tonight, guys. You got anybody else you want to talk about?
No.
Jermichael Green, he's sexy.
Jermichael Green.
He's kind of interesting with Zach Randolph now coming off the bench this season. So, would you consider taking Green with a flyer at the end of your draft? Or
I used to call Jermichael Green "Dead Man's Walking," just because he was like I always considered him a dead man walking on the court because his stats would be basically useless. They'd be basically zeros across the board. I mean, so I'm probably not the best person to ask.
Wow, you're a Jermichael Green hater. He actually played pretty good in this.
I know. That's why it was funny. I know when I saw Randolph coming off the bench now, I started cracking up. But I don't know. I'm just not a fan.
Let me make an argument.
Go ahead.
Michael Green in 15 starts last season, 11.9 points, 7.2 rebounds. So that's pretty good. 1.8 assists. 0.7 blocks, 0.9 steals. He was taking at least 1.2 three-pointer per game, but only hitting 28%. He shot 45% from the field and 77% from the line in 28 minutes a game. So, I mean, if he's going to start, and he potentially is going to play more than the 28 minutes, those stats are going to play as, you know, somebody who's kind of in your utility bench spots.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I was being a little too hard on him. Maybe he's not dead man walking. Maybe he's like comatose man walking at this point. I mean, the only thing I'll say with those stats, and those are all better than I thought. But remember, Memphis, their entire team was like depleted and injured last year. Mm-hmm. You know, and which is not the case now. They do have Conley back. They do have Marcus All, hopefully, you know, fully healthy. All the guys are pretty much ready to go. And even though Zebo is going to be coming off the bench, I still see him playing a big role. So
apparently they're going to keep Zebo like playing center, backing up Marcus All.
Yeah, I mean that's what they say. We'll see if that's the case. But you know, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I just can't get too excited for Jermichael Green. Although maybe I could be wrong. Hey, I mean, I very well could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
If you need somebody at power forward, if you need to fill a spot at the end of your draft, I think it's worth taking a flyer on him.
All right, so we could almost do a no halftime with like Bogdanovich or Jermichael Green challenge.
I would take Jermichael Green.
Let's say late in the draft though, if you had one spot left, you needed a forward, would you go Bogdanovich or would you go Jermichael Green?
Oh no, I mean I just said it. I would take Jermichael Green.
Oh, would you really?
Times. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, I'm going Green too on that by far.
Would you really? Both of you guys would?
Yeah, yeah, dude. What I just talked about how Green potentially gives you steal, block. Like he's a potential triple one guy, and he shoots percentages that don't completely rule him out from being a rotisserie player.
See, I think maybe this is where he's lost me so much money in DFS, Jermichael Green, that I just think maybe that's where my extra hatred for him comes into play.
I understand that because, yeah, but that was also different head coach. True. And Jaeger was running who knows heck what kind of rotation every single night, you know? One night, Jordan, what was it, 28 different starting lineups they had last season?
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and, anyways. So, Tyler, you're comfortable with that? Like, end of the draft, take a flyer on Jermichael Green if you need what he offers?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not going any higher than that.
In light of this conversation, I will make sure in one of my drafts – I grabbed Jermichael Green with my last pick.
Well, I don't know that you need to like make a point to grab.
No,
like,
I just mentioned
Jermichael Green. He's like I grabbed Jermichael Green in a league last week that had like I think it was 12 teams and we had 17 roster spots. I grabbed Jermichael Green in that league.
Okay, that makes sense.
At some point,
late. That makes sense. That's fair.
Yeah, but I wasn't like going out of my way to get him in a like I would rather have T.J. Warren. In my standard leagues right now with my final pick. How do you feel about TJ Warren? Tyler?
I'm with you that I'd rather have TJ Warren than Jermichael Green, but I'm not going crazy for TJ Warren either.
I'm not going crazy for TJ Warren. Well, what interests me about TJ Warren particularly is his potential to be good in the percentages in a rotisserie league and getting him late. Granted, you're not getting a high volume of shots, most likely, so that's not going to be as impactful as maybe you'd hope when you see, you know, oh, man, he's efficient. That's tight. All right, that's all I got, guys. Nothing else?
Nope, I'm good.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, this is the Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast. You can find, as Mark said earlier in the podcast, all of our updated rankings on the dailyfantasybasketballpodcast.com. I'm Kyle McEwen. You can find me on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. And this is Daniel. Tell them where they can find you.
Daniel Green at Daniel A. Green 1, green like the color.
T. Dizzle, where can we find you?
All right, I want to say one thing. There's no the. Okay, Mark always says this too. It's just dailyfantasybasketballpodcast.com. Don't type the because that's someone else.
Is there really the? Somebody else has that?
I'm pretty sure.
That's messed up. I'm going to Google it right now.
What the hell is that? All right, we're going to get out of here. We love you guys. Right,
wait, hold on. One more thing.
DailyFantasyBasketballPodcast.com, not the Daily Fantasy Basketball.
And if you want custom rankings, email the email on the website, dfbpod@gmail.com. We'll get them to you.
Tight money. All right, we love you guys. Have a good day. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.